Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that spares no expense in its attempts to find quality cinema. Well, within reason, I mean. And reason is this week's watchword, as we'll be discussing three movies that aren't likely to show up on Box Office Mojo's annual list of top grossing films, their directors being forced to work with small, some would say reasonable, budgets. We'll start with Vengeance, writer-director B.J. Novak's first feature, followed by two films peopled with French characters, the documentary Fire of Love and the comedy My Donkey, My Lover, and I. Let's begin this week's show by heading to the Lone Star State of Texas. B.J. Novak has been one of those faces that stands out in a crowd, which, along with his dry sense of humor, is a good thing, as he has been part of such TV series as The Office, The Newsroom, and The Mindy Project, as well as movies such as Saving Mr. Banks, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and Inglourious Basterds. Vengeance, which Novak wrote, directed, and stars in, takes his character, a New Yorker writer who dreams of becoming a podcaster, to Texas. His intent? To investigate the death of a woman he briefly dated. To get the story he wants, he pretends that the woman meant more to him than she actually did, a fable that her family has no trouble believing. Though not everything Novak gives us works, much of the interplay between his effete New York attitudes and the smarter-than-they-look Texans he encounters is both amusing and illustrative of the problems facing America today. For a first-timer, Novak shows a lot of potential.
Well, I take issue with one of the words that you used here, Dan, and that word is amusing, because I did not find this movie amusing at all, or really all that involving. And I do like B.J. Novak. I've liked him in some of the movies that you mentioned. Of course, he was one of the primary writers and stars of The Office, which turned out to be one of the most influential TV comedies of the last decade or so. But the whole time I was watching this movie, Vengeance, which good luck remembering that title, and the title has... As so much of this movie has kind of a twinge of irony to it, I was thinking of a podcast, a real world podcast, and maybe this is what partially inspired Novak, that was kind of a spinoff of Serial that was called S-Town, about some strange goings on and unexplained deaths in this small Alabama town. And S-Town, the S stands for a word that we can't say on the radio. And I think this movie is full of that same S. Yeah, I think this movie is full of that same S. It wants to be, I think, a satire on this kind of effete New York intellectualism, because the Novak character is a New Yorker writer. Everyone keeps saying he writes for New York Magazine. He keeps saying New Yorker. And, you know, everything that he does has to have some kind of grander theme or point to it. And he goes to this funeral under strange circumstances and then prescribes this giant meaning to it as he's putting the story together. And of course, the way that he's approaching these people just reeks of condescension. And, you know, we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop so that he realizes that he could actually learn from them. And I think that whole mindset and just the whole cottage industry of podcasting and true crime podcasting, and this idea of podcasts putting dead white girls at the center of their stories, which one of the working titles of the podcast in Vengeance is Dead White Girl. I think that's in desperate need of skewering. And I think the TV show Only Murders in the Building, which is on Hulu right now, is doing a much better job of that. I just thought that this movie wanted to have its cake and eat it too. I think that it's making fun of this mindset, but it's totally indulging in it too, especially in this kind of like wannabe Chinatown neo-noir-esque ending where we get this big nihilistic monologue about the way of the world. And then, you know, something shocking happens and it ends on ellipses rather than a full stop. I don't know. I like some of what he's doing here. And I think some of the supporting performances, which we can get into, are probably richer and more entertaining than maybe the movie deserves. But this was a big whiff for me. And I also think part of the problem is, I think B.J. Novak casting himself was also a mistake. I'm sure that was a budgetary thing. We see it happen all the time. But I would have liked somebody, I don't know, maybe a little more magnetic at the center of this, even though I know the character is supposed to be kind of a loser. So yeah, this didn't work for me at all.
And I have to say that I enjoyed it. I'm not sure why, because I do not disagree in any way with the criticisms that you've leveled at this particular film, Vengeance. Maybe I like BJ Novak also. And you pointed out that there were some notable secondary performances. Honestly, I thought all of the secondary performances were excellent. You know, I think Ashton Kutcher, who plays this enigmatic, we're not really sure if he's a guru, if he's a businessman, if he, you know, we don't know where he's coming from. I thought he's really never been better. And so I thought that that was...
That's a low, low, low bar to clear.
It is a low bar to clear, but I think he cleared it fairly well.
Mm.
And so here is the problem. If you go out to create satire, how do you do it in a way that either skewers everyone sort of equally or that is sensitive to different perspectives in today's world? And I think that that's a really difficult line to walk. I mean, we see comedians or comic actors like trying to deal with that, stand-up comics in various ways. And so I don't know, have we lost the ability to engage in that sort of humor, or did this just miss the mark?
Well, the thing I like most about Vengeance is that maybe not the film as a whole, because it is a very small film, and you know, it would be easy to either overpraise it or, as you're doing, Nathan, underpraise it. I think that what I liked about it were just some of the set pieces and some of the lines that are thrown out. There were a few times in which I laughed out loud. I loved a moment in which, you know, BJ Novak asks one of the sisters, how do you take your coffee? And she looks at him like he's a dipwad and goes, in the mouth, you know. That just struck me as being funny. And there are other, when he's at the rodeo and, you know, he's trying to explain to this crowd the difference between a writer and a writer, and somebody calls him out. That I found fairly amusing also. The big problem I had with Vengeance is its attempt finally to reconcile the notion of that title at all. And it just, to me, it goes really in the wrong direction, and it goes against everything that our character has been up to that point. It could have been so easily fixed with just a few clicks on the keyboard, but Novak didn't want to go in that direction. So I think, to me, that was the big problem. But overall, I did find it amusing.
Well, and I also like the fact that it is making fun of this whole like dating culture that's, you know, I'm sorry, it's existed for 50 some years. And, you know, people are focused on the hookup now and so forth. And just because you can do it electronically online, I mean, it does change things for sure. And that's what I thought was a funny joke, not his friend who he's hanging out with, because he was just a stereotypical jerk.
Played by John Mayer, of all people.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, but, yeah, right.
But I think that it did show how you can make something more out of a relationship for your own purposes, because we ultimately find out that something different was going on than we anticipated. So he thinks that he's been the love of this young woman's life, Abby, and it turns out maybe not so much. And so I did find that twist to be somewhat amusing.
Yeah. And going back to some of the supporting performances in Vengeance, J. Smith Cameron, longtime theater actor, also in the cast of Succession, is really good as the mother. And Boyd Holbrook, I think, is the best thing in the movie. He plays the gun-toting, rip-snorting brother who's the one that wants to get the titular vengeance in the first place. It makes sense that a New York intellectual writer would be drawn to this guy because he's an ideal subject for something like this. I just think that, going back to the satirical point of this movie, I just didn't think that it had any edge to it. I think if it works at all, it's as kind of a story about misperceptions and misconceptions, and this painting an entire group of people or an entire population of people with a broad brush, because some of these seemingly stereotypical characters have a richness to them we don't expect. I think as a mystery, this thing is also a total dud. I knew exactly who did it the second that person showed up on screen. It goes back to Ebert's law of the economy of characters or whatever he called it. I was like, well, that person did it. And when it was revealed at the end, it's supposed to be a big shock. And I was not shocked. So maybe that's me just trying to get ahead of the plot, but I could have told you that.
The one downside to this film, I thought, was the fact that I love Issa Rae. And I just thought that
she wasn't given anything.
Yeah, really. And so that was a waste, in my opinion, because she's one of the funniest people, and some of her expressions are just priceless. And that did not really happen here, because she should pop anytime that she comes on screen.
Well, she does, but unfortunately she was only on screen for about 5 minutes.
Okay, so I guess Vengeance was not a favorite among the crowd this week, yeah, given the fact that I probably liked it the best.
Yeah. At any rate, that was Vengeance. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Fire of Love and My Donkey, My Lover, and I. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Vengeance. Let's now move to Fire of Love and My Donkey, My Lover, and I. And let's begin with a look at a French couple who bonded over their shared love of volcanoes. Although the American filmmaker Sarah Dosa is credited as the director of the documentary feature Fire of Love, the film's main characters, the volcanologist team of Katya and Maurice Kraft, could reasonably be credited as well. After all, much of the footage that Dosa depends on to tell the story of the Crafts was shot by one or the other of the couple during their years of trekking around the world to check out the volcanoes that drew them together in the first place. And much of that footage is spectacular, making it well worth seeing on as big a screen as possible. Credit Dosa with writing the script that Miranda July narrates. The Crafts' story doesn't end happily, though perhaps it does so understandably. But the legacy they leave behind speaks well about the value both of science and of love.
And Dan, we're back to what you've always said about documentaries. Find some interesting characters. And I think by anyone's standards, the two protagonists, the Crafts, in this particular doc are mesmerizing, because they are so passionate, they are so nerdy, they are so into each other and their subject matter, as you point out, that it really keeps you going the whole time. And I think for those of us who appreciate and have visited a number of volcanoes across the globe, including some that are showcased in this film, being able to see these up close perspectives on volcanoes is simultaneously fascinating and frightening, yeah, to greater extreme than any zombie or horror show could ever be. And so I was initially put off by the choice of Miranda July as the narrator. She seems such a quirky pick to narrate this film. But as time went on, I appreciated her commentary more and more, because I think that, you know, she was able to sort of infuse this oddity to what we're watching, which is just a strange, strange passion in Fire of Love between everyone who's involved.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned Miranda July as the narrator, because I'm mostly a fan of her as an artist and a performer, but sometimes she does lay the cork on a little thick. I don't think she wrote the narration here, but just the inflection she gives it. And I mean, I think if you want to compare Fire of Love to other films, Werner Herzog has made not only movies about volcanoes, but has made movies about people who have tried to kind of push themselves to get as close to nature and especially dangerous nature as possible. I mean, Grizzly Man is the obvious comparison. And Miranda July's narration kind of reminded me of these kind of wistful philosophical musings that Werner Herzog likes to put in his movies. So your mileage may vary on that. I think the key to Fire of Love is not even necessarily the crafts, but the footage that the crafts filmed. Because like even beyond their scientific achievements and beyond just their courage or their folly, whatever you want to call it, they were really great filmmakers. I mean, some of the imagery that they captured is just stunning. And not even of the volcanoes, just of themselves kind of moving about the countryside and just kind of their life at home, the way that they chose to capture themselves and each other, I think actually gives us a window into that relationship better than any interview could. And so I think if you do want to see Fire of Love, that's the reason to see it, is just the legacy that they left behind in the films that they made, I think is just as powerful as any of the scientific advancements that they made.
Well, and we do learn a few things. I mean, I remember at one point they're talking about the difference between his being a geologist and her being a geochemist. And, you know, who knew? And I think that they both form this pathological unity in a sense, temperament-wise. There's much about this movie that, I mean, they're French and they sort of make fun of themselves at various points in ways that I really appreciated.
I need to point out that the three of us saw Fire of Love through streaming services, either I think Sundance or I think for us it was the Seattle International Film Festival. And I would like to see it again for only the reason that you point out, Nathan, that the cinematography is so amazing that you need to see this on a big screen. At any rate, that was the documentary feature Fire of Love. Let's close with the French import, My Donkey, My Lover, and I. It's difficult to imagine a filmmaker taking an 1879 travel book written by the Scottish novelist Robert Louis Stevenson and turning it into a 21st century French romantic comedy. Yet that's exactly what Caroline Vignal did with Stevenson's book, Travels with the Donkey in the Cévennes. Inspired, and even that's being charitable, by Stevenson's story, Vignal gives us Antoinette, played by Laure Calamy, an elementary school teacher who's having an affair with the father of one of her students. Frustrated when her lover tells her that he won't be going on vacation with her and instead will be hiking in the Cévennes with his wife and daughter, Antoinette decides to go hiking too, in the same area and even on the same route. But her expectations take her in an unexpected, maybe even life-changing direction, not just because of the hiking hardships she endures and the various people she meets, but through her not always easy relationship with Patrick, the donkey who becomes her menace, her companion, her partner, and ultimately her solace.
Look, I'm willing to concede that even the smartest people on the planet act irrationally when romance or even affairs are involved. But the woman in this movie, there were times when she was behaving in ways where I felt like I was in some kind of Kafka-esque nightmare and I was trapped with her on this trail with this donkey. And I felt for the donkey a lot of the time because I'm like, what is she doing? Like, and again, I realize this is like a frothy summertime comedy, but there were just times where I thought, you're a school teacher. Like you're an educated, intelligent person. Why are you behaving this way? But when this movie wasn't super annoying, it was pretty charming in a lot of ways. And I really liked the donkey, Patrick. I really fell for that guy.
Patrick.
Patrick, excuse me. And there's a plot development later on because we're waiting for some kind of cringe comedy to happen because we know that the boyfriend and his wife and daughter are on the same hike. And we know that it's impossible that they won't cross paths because this is, after all, a French romantic farce. And there's nothing that a French romantic farce loves more than making people that aren't supposed to meet suddenly meet. And there's a plot development involving the wife of the boyfriend that I did not see coming. And I actually thought was kind of refreshing and interesting for a movie like this. And I also think it ends in a way that I expected, but in a nice kind of gentle way with this character actually, you know, changing and finding herself through this donkey. I can see this being remade in America with, like, I don't know, Amy Schumer or Kristen Wiig or someone like that. And maybe it will. But yeah, I mean, this is sweet.
It's not going to work the same way, because one of the funniest pieces of the whole thing is our protagonist overshares so much about what she's doing. And people are like, oh, I mean, it's as though it made total sense. There's only one person who sort of pushes back at her and says, what? Why are you doing this? And I thought that was so French. I mean, honestly, I did think that was funny. I also, having been stuck for several hours on this Icelandic horses trip one time, I related a lot, because several times during that trip, I was saying to myself, why am I here? How did I do this? Why did I get here? What's wrong with my horse Butters? I don't understand. And that was not his name, but I couldn't pronounce his Icelandic name.
You know, I like this movie a lot better than you did, Nathan, just simply because I accepted it as a French farce. From the very opening scenes, we know who this woman is. She's basically undressing in front of her class and having them sing an inappropriate song, totally inappropriate song, in front of the entire school body. So, and at the end, I don't know that she learns anything. You know, does she just change one obsession for another? I don't know. But I was able to just kind of go with it and just accept it as something a little bit different.
Well, and in a summer where we haven't had a lot of summer distracting movies, this was a perfect antidote to everything that's happening in the world, to the heat wave that we've been experiencing. We saw it at the Magic Lantern, and it was chilly there, folks. Just pointing that out.
Yeah. And I wish this movie had just been called Donkey, and they got rid of all the other people.
And that was My Donkey, My Lover, and I. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbend and Mary Pat Truthart and I discussed Vengeance and Fire of Love. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the novelist Matt Haig. The paradox of volcanoes was that they were symbols of destruction, but also life. Once the lava slows and cools, it solidifies and then breaks down over time to become soil, rich, fertile soil. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.